The Chinese, whether young or old, wear silk in both winter and summer. Their ruling classes wear the finest silk. Other classes wear whatever quality they can afford. In winter, the men wear two pairs of trousers, or three, four, or five, or even more pairs, according to what they can afford. This they do in order to keep the lower parts of their bodies warm, on account of the prevalence of damp and the fear of its ill effects. In summer, they wear a single gown of silk, or something of that sort. They do not wear turbans. Their staple food is rice. They often cook a sauce to go with it, which they pour on the rice before eating it. Their ruling classes, however, eat wheat bread and the flesh of all sorts of animals, including pigs and other such creatures. They have various kinds of fruit, apples, peaches, citrons, pomegranates, quinces, pears, bananas, sugarcane, watermelons, figs, grapes, serpent melons, cucumbers, jujubes, walnuts, almonds, hazelnuts, pistachios, apricots, service berries, and coconuts. Not many date palms are to be found in China, except for the occasional specimen in the garden of a private home. Their drink is a wine made from rice. Grape wine is not to be found in their land, and it is never imported. Indeed, they do not know of it and do not drink it. From rice, they manufacture vinegar, wine, jellied sweetmeats, and other such products. The Chinese are unhygienic, and they do not wash their backsides with water after defecating, but merely wipe themselves with Chinese paper. They eat carrion and other similar things, just as the Magians do. In fact, their religion resembles that of the Magians. Their womenfolk leave their heads uncovered, but put combs in their hair. A single woman often wearing 20 combs of ivory and other such materials. Their menfolk, however, cover their heads with something like a cap. In dealing with thieves, their practice is to put them to death, if they are caught. It is said that the King of China has more than 200 major cities under his rule, each of which has its own king and eunuch chief of finance, as well as several lesser cities under its governance. Among their major cities is Canfu, the port for shipping, which has 20 lesser cities under it. A city is only designated as such if it has jadams. A jadam is an instrument that is blown, like a trumpet, but longer, and of such a girth that both hands are needed to grasp and encircle it. It is varnished with the substance used on Chinese lacquerware, and reaches 3 or 4 cubits in length, and one end narrow enough for a man to place his mouth. Its sound travels about a mile. Every city has 4 gates, and each is equipped with 5 jadams, which are blown at certain times of the night and the day. Each city is also equipped with 10 kettle drums, which are beaten when the jadams are sounded. The object of all this is to proclaim their obedience to the king. It also enables them to know the times of night and day. In addition, they have indicators to regulate the hours. They use copper coins for their transactions, and although their treasuries are like those of other rulers, no other ruler has copper as the sole currency of the land. They do indeed possess gold, silver, pearls, brocades, and silks, and all in large quantities, but all those are regarded as items of commerce, while the copper coins alone are used as currency. Ivory, frankincense, and copper ingots are all imported into China, as well as darble from the sea, which are the shells from turtles' backs, and the bushan, which we've already described, namely the rhinoceros whose horns they make into belts. Among the many types of animals they use for transport, they do not possess Arab horses, but have other breeds instead. They also have donkeys and many two-humped camels. They have a fine type of clay that is made into cups as delicate as glass. When held up to the light, the liquid in them can be seen through the body of the cup, even though it is of clay. As soon as the sea merchants put into harbour, the Chinese take charge of their goods and transport them to warehouses, guaranteeing indemnity for up to 6 months, that is, until the last of the sea merchants arrive. Then, 3/10 of the goods are taken in kind as duty, and the remainder is returned to the merchants. Any goods that the ruler needs, he also takes, but he gives the very highest price for them and pays immediately, so he does no harm to the merchants. Among the goods he buys is a camphor, paying 50 fakujis for a mound, the fakuj being 1,000 copper coins. The same camphor, if the ruler had not bought it, would be worth only half that price on the open market. When one of the Chinese dies, he is not buried until the anniversary of his death. In the intervening period, they place the body in a coffin and leave it in their house. They put quicklime on the corpse, which absorbs the fluids from it so that it remains uncorrupted. Their rulers are embalmed in aloes and camphor. They weep over the dead for 3 years. All who do not weep, whether women or men, are beaten with wooden staves, and they say to them, "Do you not grieve for your dead?" Eventually, the dead are buried in graves like the graves of the Arabs. Up until the time of burial, however, they keep on giving food to the dead person, for they maintain that he eats and drinks. They leave the food by the corpse at night, and when next morning they find none of it left, they say he has eaten it. They do not cease weeping over the corpse and giving it food as long as it remains in the house. Indeed, they will impoverish themselves for the sake of their dead and will spend every last penny and sell every last plot of land and spend the proceeds to this end. In former times, when they interred a king, they used to bury him with all his household possessions, such as robes and belts, their belts being worth large sums of money. But they have now abandoned the practice because one of these royal dead was dug up and the accompanying goods looted. The Chinese, whether poor or rich, young or old, all learn how to form letters and to write. The titles of their rulers depend on their rank and on the size of the cities they govern. In the case of a smaller city, its ruler is entitled Tusanj, the meaning of Tusanj being he set the affairs of the city straight. In the case of a major city like Kanfu, the title of its ruler is Difu. The eunuch chief of finance is called the Tukam. The eunuchs come from their own people and are deliberately castrated. The chief justice is called Lakshi Mamkun, and there are other titles of this sort that we cannot set down accurately. No one is given the office of ruler if he is less than 40 years old, for they say that someone of this age, experience has taught him. When one of the lesser rulers sits for a public hearing in the city, he sits on a judgment seat in a large courtyard, with another seat placed before him, and written submissions concerning the legal proceedings of the populace are presented to him. Behind the ruler stands a man called a Likhu. And if the ruler makes a slip in any of his pronouncements and gets it wrong, this official rejects the decision. They give no considerations to anything a petitioner has to say unless it is set down in writing. Moreover, before a litigant enters the ruler's presence, his written submission is examined by a man who stands at the palace gate and looks over each person's documents. If it contains an error, he rejects it. Consequently, only a scribe well acquainted with legal law will write anything to be submitted to the ruler. Furthermore, he has to write on the document, written by so-and-so, son of so-and-so, so that, if it does contain an error, the blame falls on the scribe, and he will be beaten with wooden staves. The ruler never sits in judgment until he has eaten and drunk, lest he judge wrongfully. In contrast to these provincial rulers, the great king is seen in public only every 10 months, for he says, "If the people see me more often, they will look on me with less reverence." Successful rulership calls for a display of kingly pride. The The common people have no idea of fairness in a ruler, so a haughty attitude should be adopted towards them in order to increase our importance in their eyes. Their landed property is not subject to a tax. Indeed, they themselves are taxed per capita of the male population, according to the authorities' estimation of individual circumstances. In the case of any Arab or other foreigner resident in the land, a tax is paid on his property in order to safeguard that property. If the price of grain rises too high, the ruler releases stocks from his granaries and sells it at less than the market price, causing the inflation to end. The income of the public treasury comes from the poll tax. I believe that the daily income from the public treasury in Kanfu is as much as 50,000 dinars, even though it is not the greatest of the cities. Among the country's minerals, the ruler has exclusive rights to salt. He also has the rights to a plant that they drink with hot water, and it is sold in every city for large sums of money, called sak. It is leafier than alfalfa and a little more aromatic with a bitterness to it. To prepare it, water is boiled, then the leaves are sprinkled on it, and it serves them as an antidote to all ailments. The entire income of the public treasury consists of the poll tax and the receipts from salt and this plant. In every city, there is something called the dara. This is a bell hanging over the head of the ruler of the city and connected to a cord stretching until it passes over the middle of the highway for the use of all the common people. The distance between the ruler and the highway is about a farsakh. If the cord is moved, even slightly, the bell moves too. Anyone who has a complaint against injustice moves the cord, causing the bell to move over the ruler's head. The complainant is then permitted to enter the ruler's presence, so that he may deliver in person an account of his circumstances and set forth his grievance. This procedure is used throughout the land. Anyone wanting to travel from one part of China to another obtains two documents, one from the ruler and one from the eunuch chief of finance. The document from the ruler is a permit for the road, made out in the name of the traveller and those accompanying him, and stating his age and his companion's ages, and the tribe from which he comes. All persons in China, whether of its native population or the Arabs or other foreigners, are required to declare their ancestral origin from some group with which they may be officially identified. The second document from the eunuch concerns the traveller's money and any goods he may have. The reason for this procedure is that there are guard posts on the road where they examine both documents, and when a traveller arrives at one, they write, "So-and-so, son of so-and-so, and such-and-such an origin, arrived at our guard post on the nth day of the nth month of the nth year, accompanied by so-and-so." This is in order that none of the traveller's money or goods should go missing. Whenever anything is actually lost or a traveller dies, the manner in which this occurred will be known and his property returned to him or his heirs. The Chinese act fairly where financial dealings or debts are concerned. If someone makes a loan to another person, he writes a document to the borrower, obliging him to repay. The borrower also writes a document to the lender, marking it with a mark between his two fingers, the middle and index finger. The two documents are then placed together and folded in on each other, and an inscription is written across both of them at the place where the edges join, and the recipient of the loan receives his copy and acknowledges his debt. Subsequently, if one of the parties should repudiate the other, he is told to produce his copy of the document. It may then happen that the debtor maintains that he does not have one, whereupon the creditor's copy, in the debtor's own handwriting and with his mark, can be presented as proof. In such a case, a debtor who still repudiates his creditor will be told, "Produce another document, then, stating that this sum is not owed by you. And, if you cannot, and the creditor's claim which you have repudiated is shown to be beyond dispute, then you will be made to suffer 20 blows on the back with wooden staves, and to pay 20,000 fakujis of copper coins. The fine would amount to around 2,000 dinars, while the 20 blows would be enough to kill him. No one in China would willingly bring that upon himself, for fear of ruining both his person and his property, and we never have seen anyone have to undergo it. Consequently, they act fairly towards each other. They have a stone tablet set up, 10 cubits tall, on which is written in engraved characters a list of remedies and diseases, each particular disease paired with its appropriate remedy, and if a sick person is poor, he is given the cost of his medicine from the public treasury. When a male child is born to anyone, his name is registered with the ruler, and when he reaches the age of 18, he has to pay the poll tax. If, however, he lives to the age of 80, he no longer has to pay the tax. Instead, he is given a pension from the public treasury. For they say, when he was young, he paid us a tax. Now he is old, we pay him a pension. Also, every city has a school and a teacher to teach the poor how to write, and the children of the poor are fed from the public treasury. There is a village in the mountains in China called Taiyu, where the people are short in stature. Every short person in China is said to come from there. The Chinese are a fine-looking, tall people, with clear, pale complexions tinged with red. No people have blacker hair than they.